Just as we came to the hills, we met with a sycamore of a most extraordinary size, it measuring 3 feet from the ground, 45 feet around, lacking 2 inches, and not 50 yards from it was another, 31 feet around. George Washington, written while exploring the Great Kanawha River, November 4th, 1770.
Washington's description of the virgin forest that covered most of West Virginia is one of the few early written accounts we have. We do know that the trees were huge and that the vast forest canopy was often unbroken, making it dark underneath. But there were exceptions. Native Americans used fires to make clearings for agriculture, and in the late 1700s and early 1800s, European settlers built iron ore smelters or furnaces in the forest, according to Joe McNeil, professor of forestry at West Virginia University.
They needed iron to make things that would be durable, tools and weapons, and iron was a valuable commodity. And so they would go out and they would find iron nuggets or iron ore deposits, and they would dig trenches to acquire the iron ore. And then they'd have to smelt it. And so they would build these large iron ore smelters, and they would use coal, but they also used a lot of wood. And so over a long period of time, you had them cutting the trees down to serve as fuel for the smelters.
I've come to the Stewart Recreation Area outside Elkins, part of the Monongahela National Forest. This woodland was last logged more than 100 years ago. I'm with Don Teeter, a surveyor and local historian.
This tree's a red oak, very impressive size. I'm going to stretch the diameter tape around it. We have a diameter of almost 44 inches on this tree. Now, the diameter is measured, generally speaking, 4.5 feet from the ground. It's called DBH, or diameter at breast height, and that's the standard measurement that's used in the timber industry. This is the sort of tree that would excite a logger.
Within a relatively short walk through the woodland, we see large specimens of red oak, black oak, white oak, scarlet oak, chestnut oak, eastern hemlock, yellow poplar, beech, red maple, and black cherry. But Teeter reminded me that before the period of major industrialization in the United States, most of the timber in West Virginia was relatively worthless, except to build your house or a barn or a fence.
When the early settlers first got to this area, the forest was actually an impediment to them because there was no market for the logs. The trees would keep the ground from being able to produce the grass that they needed to raise livestock. It would keep the sun from being able to reach the ground for them to grow crops. So what they did a lot of times was what was called hacking or deadening, where they would girdle the trees. They would cut through the bark on a strip maybe 4 to 8 inches wide near the stump of the tree so that the tree would die. And then, of course, once the tree died and you didn't have the thick foliage up there, the sun could make it down through. And gradually over the years, then they would clear the stumps out of the fields.
But the beginning of an intense period of industrialization in the United States meant that West Virginia's ancient forest was about to disappear. Joe McNeil again.
Prior to the end of the 19th century, going into the 20th, we saw this huge swath of the Appalachian forest cut down. And places like Dolly Sods were dramatically affected. I mean, their entire ecology was affected by the harvesting and then the aftermath of burning and reburning and then reburning again.
Between 1879 and 1920, there was a great logging boom. During this period, devastating logging practices and fires removed almost all of the old-growth forest in West Virginia. 30 billion board feet of timber was cut down. Don Teeter says that in the early days, logging was mostly done along rivers, so companies could float the logs to sawmills.
But the real decimation, you could say, of the forest in a lot of areas could not occur until we had the logging railroads, when you could punch those railroads up into all the little hollows and you could reach all of the trees. And the Shea-geared locomotive, the Heisler, and the Climax locomotives were critical in that because they could be used on a grade that was much steeper than other railroad engines could use, and you could have also sharper curves. It was like an all-wheel drive vehicle today. But tremendous power in those engines and the ability to remove large loads from the woods.
But cutting down that much forest in a relatively short time had some pretty horrific consequences. Fires burned large areas, including logging boom towns. After the surrounding forest was cut down, many of those towns disappeared altogether. In addition, there was devastating soil erosion, flooding, and degraded water quality. So in 1911, Congress passed the Weeks Act, which led to the establishment of many eastern national forests, including the Monongahela National Forest, which today covers more than 900,000 acres across 10 counties in West Virginia. Soon after, professional foresters started managing forests to protect wildlife and waterways and to try to maximize the many assets of the forest. Over the next few decades, the forests across West Virginia began to recover. Today, West Virginia boasts 12 million acres of forest, much of which is harvested on a regular basis. Forestry professor Joe McNeil again.
When somebody cuts a stand of timber down, it's not gone forever. If you leave a field just sitting, over time, it becomes a forest again. We've had a variety of harvests across the state, and yet right now there's a huge amount of timberland that exists in the state. Almost 80% of our state, in terms of area, is forested. We've not cut like we used to. So don't be terrified when you see somebody cutting timber down. Go find out what you can about it. I think the other thing I would say is that our forests are renewable. They do come back, sometimes even when you don't want them to. So that would be what I would leave you with.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Jean Snediger.